Oh, I'm so happy to have Paul Rudnick on. I love Paul Rudnick. He's, I think, the funniest guy per pound.
Pound for pound.
Yeah. He's a light middleweight. He's a great, funny guy. He writes for The New Yorker a lot and does many other things. He's written plays and movies, and you know it. You name it, he's done it. And we have one this once again from his lair in Manhattan. Are you in your lair right now, Paul Rudnick?
I am indeed. Yeah. It's so good to be back.
How are you?
I'm well.
I've missed you. What have you been up to now? What's the latest project? Or can we speak of it?
Let me see. Well, I'm working on a couple of books and a pilot for HBO and that kind of thing. But
wow, oh, good.
And I've got a new piece in The New Yorker next week as well on trigger warnings.
Trigger warnings. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so there are some deeply sensitive people who do feel that any book or movie or anything that contains material that might upset anyone should come with some form of labeling that alerts us that there may be scenes of bullying or prejudice.
Right. So it's a little asterisk saying could contain Paul Rudnick material.
Exactly. Go read no further.
Speaking of which, now this whole Hobby Lobby thing, you know, it was hard to find anyone who was speaking straight from the, wherever people speak straight from these days, on this whole Hobby Lobby thing, and it was very controversial, but you seem to have found a way of getting at it.
Well, see, I think the first and probably the most prominent thing about the whole Hobby Lobby controversy is that it's so much fun to say Hobby Lobby. Every so often there's a news event that forces the deeply serious newscasters on CNN or Fox or the network to say something that sounds really silly.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of years ago during the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court, when there was all the debate about the Coke can with the pubic hair on it. So, you know, Brian Williams had to keep repeating that.
Yeah.
So Hobby Lobby is kind of right up there.
Yeah.
And once I started researching the store, because I think, I'm sure the minute they thought of that title, they thought, well, that's so catchy, and they're right.
Yeah.
But I thought, Is the store only a lobby? You know, I thought this had any sort of specifics to it, but it doesn't seem to.
No, maybe it started in a lobby or something, and it just grew really huge.
That could be, or unless they are, as I kind of suggested, lobbyists on behalf of the crafting world.
Yeah.
You know, that someone has to speak up for sequins and styrofoam.
Yeah, okay. The only disturbing thing I found about, and we're going to hear his... you'll be speaking for Eleanor, I guess, in this.
Yeah, right? Indeed.
Yes, she is. She's very good. But the only thing disturbing is that you must have a tremendous knowledge of crafting to be able to write this.
I do, and actually the people at The New Yorker found that very disturbing.
You see, they would.
But I knew that much, and they weren't wrong. And they said, Paul, you must have had to do so much research, and the sad fact was I didn't have to do any. It's all in there. Because I think when I was growing up in New Jersey, I could not have been more fascinated with crafting, which continues.
Huh.
And the two main crafting moments that I remember were because I was a Cub Scout, which is kind of crafting mecca in New Jersey where you're not about to, you know, go outdoors and do anything rigorous. But we would take Clorox bottles and turn them into piggy bags.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, if you put a Clorox bottle on its side and put corks for little feet and a pipe cleaner for the squiggly tail, you can pretend it's a piggy bank.
Yeah.
But even as a child, I knew, no, that's a Clorox bottle. You know, and you probably shouldn't touch it and then lick your fingers.
Lost a lot of Cub Scouts.
The other crafting peak then was, and this was again as a Cub Scout, we were given a lot of used bowling pins, which we painted to look like Cub Scouts.
Yeah.
With little crepe paper neckerchiefs and a little hat. And it was a little odd because I thought, bowling pins are designed to be knocked down.
Yeah.
So you're kind of creating Cub Scout victims.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of crafts I love, the ones that don't make a whole lot of sense, but they're still really fun.
But, you know, this suggests to me that you crafted beyond the Cub Scout years, because there's a tremendous knowledge here.
I have. I have a kind of comprehensive appreciation for the crafting world. Because also I like anything that you can do really fast and appreciate it and then throw it out. Because that's what crafting is. I mean, crafting is also designed as a form of revenge. It's a gift that people have to display at least once. You know, before torching. But there is something deeply satisfying, especially if you watch any of the crafting shows or any of the crafting items sold on Home Shopping. The amount of hole punches, it's a $1 billion industry.
Yeah.
You know, in hole punches alone.
Yeah, but don't you agree that the hot glue gun was a turning point in crafting?
Oh, my, the hot glue gun and the staple gun are probably my favorite weapons. I wish there was a form of, well, I'm sure there is such a thing as extreme crafting, but you'd really like to see crafters, you know, face off in a cage match. Because you could do damage with a staple gun.
Yeah.
Well, hot glue guns are, I just saw something that someone who still had a childhood scar from dripping hot glue onto their thigh. So those things really.
You saw something, or you mean you met someone with that condition, or you?
Well, that's just a crazy dream.
what is that there? Is that a hot glue gun?
Exactly. That's the sort of real Sons of Anarchy type injury. You know, I was creating Christmas tree ornaments, and suddenly everything went horribly wrong.
Without further ado, can you introduce us to the hobby lobbyist?
All right. This was, let me see. I'll just give you a taste of it, but it begins by saying many people have been wondering exactly what edged the Supreme Court towards its recent decision involving Hobby Lobby, the chain of craft stores that has been allowed a religious exemption from funding birth control for its employees. An urgent letter has come to light, which may clarify the matter. Then, to the Supreme Court, especially Justice Scalia, who is a prime candidate for the benefits of therapeutic elder crafting in a calming environment. My name is Eleanor Crimley Dubbins, and as one of this country's most dedicated crafters and a 3-time second runner-up in our local Let's Get Craft and Craft Brie here in San Diego, I would like to express how thoroughly crafting is intertwined with my deepest religious convictions. A careful reading of Genesis reveals that when the serpent first offered Eve the apple, she replied, quote, "I bet if I shellacked that apple and studded it with fragrant cloves and then hot glued the whole thing with an overlay of jumbo red sequins, it would make a darling year-round ornament for our tree of the knowledge of good and evil." To which Adam, Eve's husband, responded, "That sounds great, sweetheart. Why don't you get cracking while I finish creating a rustic gun rack from all of these hooves and antlers? Because animal parts ain't just for eating, they're for crafting." So as you can see, crafting started on practically day one of the Judeo-Christian world. Why, some folks claim that our planet itself is just a doodad that the Almighty came up with after spinning his rainy day fun pick a project activities wheel. Now, should I go on, or is that
please,
enough?
Please, please do.
Do you want a little more?
More.
All right. Let me see. Well, as civilization progressed, so did crafting. Moses originally intended to use his home wood-burning kit to char the Ten Commandments onto a knotty pine plaque, which could also be used, with the addition of screw-in brass-plated hooks, as a hold-all for house keys. But he ultimately settled on a poured resin look of granite option. I like to think that Moses wanted to include an 11th commandment: thou shalt not use condoms or real stained glass, not when the acrylic colors are even more vibrant and easier to keep clean. I'll admit that I wasn't always such a fervent believer, either in God or in the sort of homemade Mother's Day cards that can land a person in the emergency room with a hole punch wound. My commitment to the twin glories of Jesus and yard sale ready collectibles began when I was 14 years old and my parents dragged me to a Christmas midnight mass. As I was yawning and wishing that I was off with my friends in someone's unchaperoned Finnish basement, guzzling eggnog laced with cranberry juice, I happened to glance at the nativity scene on the high altar. Where the miracle of Jesus' birth had been imaginatively interpreted with sock monkeys. At that very moment, I heard a voice telling me, "Eleanor, go ye forth and tell of the Lord's wonders," using pipe cleaners, popsicle sticks, and enormous day-glow crepe paper sunflowers with plastic googly eyes and refrigerator magnet grins. By the very next day, I had crafted a miniature replica of the Last Supper, entirely out of those tiny jet-puffed marshmallows, empty bottles of mini-bar vodka, and human hair. I soon joined a fast-growing church called Our Lady of the Decoupage Trinket Box. Our beloved pastor, the Reverend Lionel Harmwater, has led his flock in scrapbooking the entire Bible by adding doily borders to every page, along with oak tag framed photos of bowling pins on which parishioners have enameled the faces of their patron saints. This Bible now weighs more than 58 pounds and rests on a reinforced redwood picnic table in the sacristy, surrounded by beeswax candles set inside coffee cans that have been spray painted to look like spray painted coffee cans. I love to page through this Bible to discover pop-up tinfoil angels holding antique parchment banners reading, "Pray and crochet," or "You can't commit adultery with a staple gun." Of course, there are plenty of folks who just don't believe either in God or in using frayed extension cords to wire together old frisbees and oven mitts to create a one-of-a-kind holiday wreath for a nursing home front door. These non-believers, or as I like to call them, people without hand-tooled, Navajo-inspired Naugahyde change purses, live mostly in the northeastern portion of America, which, frankly, is a crafting sinkhole. There is hope, however. A crafter's gospel has just been discovered, rolled up inside a Clorox bottle that had been repurposed as a piggy bank and hidden in a cavern outside Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. This gospel includes a revelatory sermon in which Jesus, in no uncertain terms, condemns any undecorated surface, including simple pine coffins, which can be made so much more appealing and therefore more righteous by adding bottle caps dusted with clear glitter and arranged in snowflake patterns. When it comes to the court's decision on contraception, I think I can be of service. For my five beautiful daughters, and the other one, I have used a cheerful, heavy-gauge yarn, mixing strands of cashmere, alpaca, and barbed wire to knit what I call a crotch cozy. When my girls wear their crotch cozies, they not only receive endless compliments in the locker room, but sexual intercourse becomes impossible. Any additional form of birth control is unnecessary. Case closed. That's what Eleanor was saying.
Paul Rudnick, Hobby Lobbyist, puts it all together.
I do what I can, thank you.
And it makes a strange kind of sense. Actually, that's a pretty extensive knowledge of crafting, which you're not totally owning up to, Paul.
I know. No, I'm not going to be ashamed. I enjoy. My name is Paul, and I'm a crafter. Although I will also admit, though, that this piece was mentioned on a very right-wing evangelical site.
Yes.
Which is called Newsbusters, and it says. Newsbusters says exposing and combating liberal media bias. And the comments were kind of wonderful because they said things like, "There is a special place in hell for this offensive mockery."
And imagine how it will be decorated.
That's right. Although then one very nice gentleman said, My wife went to the Hobby Lobby in Moorhead City on Friday. She said the people there were so nice and helpful, and now they have to put up with crap like this.
That was the nice one? That was the one.
That was one of the kinder ones.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. Paul, it's a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for taking time from your busy day. If it is busy day, I don't know. Is today a busy day for you?
It can be. Yeah, now yeah. I'm going to go back to work.
Get back to work.
With more offensive mockery.
Offensive mockery. Keep it up, please. We need that. Paul Rudnick. Thanks very much, Paul.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Paul Rudnick. Read him in New Yorker often.